In Search of Excellence, Lessons from America's Best-Run Companies, author Tom Peters and Robert H. Waterman Jr. Why In Search of Excellence is a Business Classic. In Search of Excellence, Lessons of America's Best-Run Companies is counted a business classic because the authors made case studies from companies which stand out in their realms, jotted them down in an exciting piece of research to be applied by other companies that seek success and excellence. These cases of success are never out of date, for success depends on criteria that neither change nor are eliminated with time, such as quality, flexibility, focus on customers, creativity, positive reinforcement, and putting plans into action. Successful American companies. Early in 1997, a general concern with the problems of management effectiveness and a particular concern with the nature of the relationship between strategy, structure, and management effectiveness led us to assemble into internal task forces at McKinsey & Company. One was to review our thinking on strategy, and the other was to get back to the drawing board on organizational effectiveness. It was, if you like, McKinsey's version of applied research. We, the authors, were the leaders of the project on organizational effectiveness. A natural step was to talk extensively to executives around the world who were known for their skill, experience, and wisdom on the question of organizational design. We found that they too shared our disquiet about conventional approaches. All were uncomfortable with the limitations of the usual structural solutions, especially the latest aberration, the complex matrix form. Yet they were skeptical about the usefulness of any known tools, doubting they were up to the task of revitalizing and redirecting billion-dollar giants. Criteria for success. An excellent example is McDonald's. As successful as that corporation was in the United States, doing well abroad meant more than creating an international division. In case of McDonald's, it meant, among other things, teaching the German public what a hamburger is. To become less dependent on government sales, Boeing had to build the skill to its wares in the commercial marketplace, a feat most of its competitors never could pull off. Such skill building, adding new muscle shucking old habits, getting really good at something new to the culture is difficult. That sort of thing clearly goes beyond the structure. Yet the concept of innovation seemed to us to define the task of the truly excellent manager or management team. The companies that seemed to us to have achieved that kind of innovative performance were the ones we labeled excellent companies. There are 8 attributes that emerged to characterize most nearly the distinction of the excellent, innovative companies as follows. 1. A bias for action. The true power of the small group lies in its flexibility. For instance, the effective productivity or new product teams in the excellent companies usually from 5 to 10 in size. The academic evidence is clear on this. Optimal group size in most studies is about 7. Other findings are supportive. Teams that consist of volunteers are of limited duration and set their own goals, which are usually found to be much more productive than those with the adverse traits. 2. Close to the customer. Although he's not a company, our favorite illustration of closeness to the customer is car salesman Joe Girard. He sold more new cars and trucks each year for 11 years running than any other human being. In fact, in a typical year, Joe sold more than twice as many units as whoever was in second place. In explaining his secret of success, Joe said, "I send out over 13,000 cards every month." Number 3. Autonomy and entrepreneurship. Most corporations fail to tolerate the creative fanatic who has been the driving force behind most major innovations. Innovations, being far removed from the mainstream of the business, show little promise in the early stages of development. Moreover, the champion is obnoxious, impatient, egotistic, and perhaps a bit irrational in organizational terms. As a consequence, he's not hired. If hired, he's not promoted or rewarded. He is regarded as not a serious person, embarrassing or disruptive. 4. Productivity through people. There are fundamental lessons from the excellent company's research. In other words, if you want productivity and the financial reward that goes with it, you must treat your workers as your most important assets. In A Business and Its Belief, Thomas J. Watson Jr. puts it well. IBM's philosophy is largely contained in 3 simple beliefs. I want to begin with what I think is the most important, our respect for the individual. This is a simple concept, but in IBM it occupies a major portion of management time. We devote more effort to it than anything else. This belief was bone deep in my father. 5. Hands-on, value-driven. Every excellent company we studied is clear on what it stands for, and it takes the process of the value shaping seriously. In fact, we wonder whether it's possible to be an excellent company without clarity on values and without having the right sorts of values. The formation of an institution is marked by the making of value commitments, that is, choices which fix the assumptions of policymakers as to the nature of the enterprise, its distinctive aims, methods, and roles. These character-defining choices are often not made verbally. They might not even be made consciously. The institutional leader is primarily an expert in the promotion and protection of values. Leadership fails when it concentrates on sheer survival. 6. Stick to the knitting. The most comprehensive study of the diversified companies was conducted by UCLA's Richard Rummelt for his Harvard Business School doctoral dissertation, published in 1974 as strategy, structure, and economic performance. Using a broad sample of large American firms, Rumelt found that those businesses with dominant constrained and related constrained diversification strategies were unquestionably the best overall performers. Both strategies are based upon the concept of controlled diversity. In Rumelt's words, these companies have strategies of entering only those businesses that build on, draw strength from, and enlarge some central strength or competence. While such firms frequently develop new products and enter new businesses, they loathe to invest in areas that are unfamiliar to management. He adds that these better-performing firms built their diversification strategies on some central skill or strength. Rumelt's analysis was based on the performance of a valid sample of Fortune 500 firms over a 20-year period. 7. Simple form, lean staff. The simplicity of form forced by a philosophy like that is closely akin to other stirring examples from our research. Among the supports that make these product division as building block structures work are 1. Extraordinary divisional integrity. All the main functions, including product development, finance, and personnel, are in each division. 2. Constant hiving off of new divisions and rewards for so doing. J&J's 150 divisions are up from only 80 10 years ago. 3. A set of guidelines that describes when a new product or product line automatically becomes division. For example, at about 20 million level at 3M. 4. Shifting people and even products or product lines among divisions on a regular basis and without the acrimony that this would create in most companies. 8. Simultaneous, loose-tight properties. Take the quality versus cost trade-off, for example, or small versus big, or effectiveness versus efficiency. They turn out in the excellent companies not to be trade-offs at all. There's a story about a GM foundry manager who led a remarkable economic turnaround. He painted the grimy interior of his foundry white, insisting that he would pay attention to quality, and that cost would follow. As he pointed out, to begin with, if you are making it with good quality, you don't have to make everything twice. There is nothing like quality. It is the most important word used in these companies. Quality leads to a focus on innovativeness, to doing the best one can for every customer on every product. Hence, it is a goad to productivity, automatic excitement, and external focus. The drive to make the best affects virtually every function of the organization. In conclusion, excellent companies seem to be doing that the rest are not. They focus on the external, on service, on quality, on people, and on informality. Those value content words we noted, and those may very well be things, the only things, worth being simplistic about. Remember what the executive James Brian Quinn says. It's important for people to want to be the best at something. He doesn't really care very much for what.